Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. And my very special guest for 2 hours today in studio is the illustrious, the innocuous Dr. Green.
Yep, that's me.
I think that's a good introduction. You think, industrious, innocuous.
Iniquitous.
Ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous, yes, there you go. All the big words. Anything bigger than marmalade is a good word to be using.
Oh, I completely agree. I do think that when it comes to the daiquiri, what I was wondering is, look, it's about business, isn't it? That's what cannabis legalization should really be about, taking it out of the criminal sector and putting it into a legal, business-minded, regulated market. And I think the thing that attracted me to the daiquiri at the first, other than the fact that I got busted for pot and really hated the cannabis laws and wanted to do something about it and contribute in some way, was that I felt that a business actually needed to be established that was legitimate, moral, ethical, so on and so forth, to provide a good example of what actually works in terms of cannabis retail.
Yep. And that was all part of the reasons that we decided to proceed and open such a place. I mean, what we were really looking for in the first instance was a mechanism to keep our campaign vehicle, our large bus that was all beautifully signed, written up with legalized cannabis splashed all over it. How do we keep that on the road? We needed funding. You can't put love and support in your tank to keep you driving around the country. It takes real money. It takes real fuel. So we were looking for a way of gaining extra support for the bus. And so by taking on this large warehouse factory space as a place to keep the bus, and that became the focal point. People would come along and be happy to be contributing either through their purchasing or by an entrance fee to the club. But it was a fun place. We've got pool table and ping pong tables, dart boards. There's a library, lots of couches and coffee tables. Beautiful fresh coffee, brewed coffee. And in the future, we'll even be bigger and more brighter and beautiful. We're going to actually have our own daiquiri branded coffee. That we will be selling openly, because it's not illegal, that people will be calling into our new premises, and coffee is going to be a key feature of that. I don't know, coffee and a joint seem to just go together, don't they?
Much like high tea.
Much like high tea. Personally, I prefer a cup of tea in a joint than a cup of coffee in a joint, but coffee shops like they've had in Holland for many, many years. There's nothing wrong with that model. Whatever it takes to allow consenting adults to consent together.
Well, this, again, takes it back to personal responsibility, because if you have a cannabis problem, and there are people that do have cannabis problems who maybe at some points commit crimes in order to obtain money to do so.
Cannabis these are very small.
Cannabis is not responsible.
Crimes are committed by criminals.
Yeah, exactly. And anybody who's got any kind of problem where they'd start to become criminal about it, I don't think that necessarily punishing them for their crimes per se is exactly what's going to help them. I think actually offering some sort of a treatment program so that they can understand what addiction is, how to take personal responsibility for themselves, that kind of thing. I mean, that's me personally.
Well, in the wider discussion, where there are those that say all drugs should be legally available but regulated, and that takes it out of the hands of the bad people. But I don't advocate one way or the other for a wide range of drugs. My personal campaign, my personal interest is cannabis. There is no scientific or moral reason why cannabis should be illegal, to the point where people that are involved in growing or selling are usually incarcerated for some very long periods of time. There is no sound reason for that. And if that is the greatest change that we can make in life, that we can change those laws, then other drugs and the way they're controlled, that'll take care of itself in due course. So let's deal with the one that the majority of people who take illicit substances are using, and that is cannabis.
Let's think about statistics here, because I heard that about 85% of New Zealanders under the age of 25 have used cannabis, or between the ages of 18 and 25, sorry, have used cannabis somewhere around that region. And in the United States, I believe I read something in High Times magazine that 87% of cannabis users, illegal drug users, only use cannabis.
That's true. Cannabis is the most widely used illicit drug around the world. But, you know, I get a little bit annoyed sometimes with people talking about percentages and numbers of people. I think if there is one person in this country who consumes cannabis and there is a law that says, if we catch you doing it, we will send you to jail. I think that law is wrong and that it should not rely on majority support in order to have sound drug laws. What we need are members of parliament or politicians who are willing to make decisions based on sound scientific reasoning. And if there's nobody that wants to smoke it, so what? The law should reflect that there is no harm to be caused to the community by cannabis. In fact, the vast majority of harm that occurs in the community is caused by the law. I've spent a number of years in jail over the last... Look, since 1999, when I got busted in Australia for consuming cannabis... I have, in the last 15 years, had a total of 1 year where I have not been under state control, either in prison, on bail, or on remand awaiting trial. A total of 1 year. That's 4 months on one occasion. It is wrong, and it's an expensive nonsense and bad public policy that needs to change urgently. And fortunately, it is happening.
Well, I would hope that it happens a lot faster than it is. If you notice how with the impetulance of youth, you never think that things are getting done quite fast enough as people continually suffer day by day, you know. You just think about all these people that are dying of cancer out there that have got no relief, going through chemo, that kind of thing, and this thing that alleviates so many of the negative symptoms. I mean, it's ironic, don't you think, that it's the doctors that are destroying health and so many times that they are trying to heal people, they're actually really hurting them and damaging them, in some cases permanently, and giving them nothing effective for the relief of the symptoms that they're causing.
I think that is a very sad situation. Fortunately, doctors are, in the main, intelligent, well-educated people, and when they are shown the truth about cannabis, oft times will just change their mind.
Now we have a caller into the studio here. Caller, you just rang my home phone here. I believe this might be one of our guests actually calling in today. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, hi, it's Sandy. Sorry, I didn't get your message until about a couple of minutes ago. Forgive me your number. Thank you for having me on. I actually know the caller that you just had before, Dr. Green. He's a good friend of mine. I am the Coromandel Normal Rep for the Coromandel area, the entire Coromandel area.
And you're doing a fine job, Sandy.
Marijuana had just been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and I believe that I have had it for about 15 years. I've been self-medicating for about 15 years, and I need to get into some sort of clinical trial involving multiple sclerosis and cannabis. They have told me that if I don't take their medication through the national health system, that I don't have very long to live. And basically, I have lost faith in their, you know, the normal medication, etc. I believe in medical cannabis, that it will help me. But the way that the laws are in New Zealand, I will be a criminal. You know, I probably already am a criminal for using cannabis. But I've spoken to my friend Billy McKee through Green Cross, and he said that I need to start eating it. Well, I can't find a supply of the stuff that I need to eat. I'm not talking about the juicy buds. I'm talking about cabbage, and I can't find any anywhere. And I don't know how to make it into the thing that I need to eat it for. And so I'm really desperate, you know, to get it legalised. And, yeah, that's pretty much what I have to say.
All right. Well, thank you, Sandy, for calling in. One of the things I also wanted to talk to you about, and I think this is what we've been discussing on the show up until this point as well, is just exactly how much suffering and pain gets caused to people, not because they're bad people, but because the law is bad. And again, having access to medicine, isn't having access to appropriate medical treatment that's not prohibitively expensive and is proven to be effective like a human right or something? What do you think, Doctor?
I agree with you, Vinny. I hear stories such as Sandy's all the time as I've travelled around the country meeting with medical users and recreational users. I'm deeply saddened that the one medicine that can be so helpful, particularly for people like Sandy that suffer from multiple sclerosis. I have a number of friends that are sufferers of multiple sclerosis, and they get a great deal of relief, some more than others, but a great deal of relief from the use of cannabis. And to think that we won't allow that, and that in fact we would jail somebody for using cannabis for their medical condition, I think is one of the greatest evils perpetrated on mankind. So
I liken it to
we need to change this. I'm with you, Sandy.
I liken it, Sandy, to beating somebody up who's in a wheelchair. And you know how you look on people who do that kind of thing, you know, the beating up on the helpless? That's what this phenomenon really represents to me.
Yep. Look, Sandy, I'm with you. We think that the way things are unfolding around the world, and particularly here in New Zealand, that there is positive signs of change to cannabis laws. The fact that Peter Dunn, who has had his jackboot on the controlling of legalizing of cannabis for many years now, the fact that he's now a disgraced Member of Parliament and hopefully soon to be an ex-Member of Parliament, I think that's a major step forward. And we look with interest to see what the new minister will achieve. Will he be a little more open-minded and not be influenced by the pressure groups that come to bear when it comes to changing cannabis laws?
Mm. Sandy, have you ever heard the term the cannabis lobby, the pro-cannabis lobby? I only heard this term for the first time in the last month when this TV3 debate was on. I wasn't aware that there was an organised so-called pro-cannabis lobby, as in a lobbyist of some description. I thought it just seemed to be ordinary people with voluntary organisations and so on and so forth, such as normal, that you yourself are a part of.
Yes, no, I actually haven't heard of a pro-cannabis lobby, but that is my plan, is to become one myself. I don't know how you actually lobby the parliament, but my plan is to go down there, to Parliament, hang out, try and tell people my story. You know, I'm physically well at the moment. I do have pins and needles in my hands, which in the past week has gotten worse. I've had friends and family say to me, oh, you're crazy, take the medication, you're going to end up in a wheelchair. Well, while I can walk and I can talk and I can hopefully string words together to make sense, I'm going to go down there and possibly harass them. I don't want to. I'm a customer services background, so I want to just talk to people and tell them my story, and hopefully they'll listen. But my plan is to not take their medication until medical marijuana has been legalised. And so I'm trying to put pressure on the government and saying, look, you know, if you don't give me this, I'm probably going to die. I'll become a martyr for the cause, and they'll probably hold a candlelight vigil. And my mum said to me, well, you won't be around to see that, but I'll know that my friends in the legalised cannabis camp will take up my cause, you know.
Sandy, you're much too important to sacrifice your life in that fashion. It is important that you do keep talking to people. I have been saying for some years now that this fight is not going to be won in a minute or two or in a month or two. It's won by talking to people one-on-one. And ultimately, talking to the members of Parliament is the most important thing that you can be doing. So I support what you're doing. I encourage you to keep doing it. And
black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the Island Change Procrastination of New Zealand. And Dr. Green in studio is my very special guest, and he's just been showing me photos of their new fish, Chiliti, which I believe is the Chernobylan pronunciation, down in Tauranui there. With a large cafeteria, and they're going to be building a garage to park the buses under, you know, keep those puppies undercover and so on and so forth. And nice new place that you've got there, Doctor.
It's a wonderful place, and the fact that it hasn't been utilised for any useful purpose for some years now makes me feel really good that we have a positive role for this building in a location that's accessible from all over our country. So if you're visiting our country from anywhere around the world, then make a note. The Daiquiri is based in Taumarunui, right in the centre of the North Island. It's on one of the main roads between Auckland and Wellington. Feel free to call in. We open on the 19th of November, and we open 7 days a week from that time onwards. So we're looking forward to making some positive changes to our laws as we move forward in promoting cannabis, responsible cannabis use by medicinal users and recreational users.
Going to get some flyers popped up around the backpackers in New Zealand, you know. There's bound to be plenty of Euro trash if you're keen to pop in and get score something. Because, in fact, that's something else that I noticed as well, is that a lot of travellers – I didn't mean to call you Euro trash. I'm sorry, guys. There's a lot of travellers from overseas who come here, and again, because it doesn't have a regulated market, they don't know where to find any ganja, and it's just kind of like luck of the draw, who they bump into, what they meet. And it would be nice if tourists could actually benefit from some kind of marketplace that's available to them.
Well, that's true. But I should point out and make this extremely clear, as I mentioned earlier, we are not going to be selling cannabis from these new premises. We don't want the police coming in and closing us down again. Frankly, we're going to be an information centre and a clearinghouse for activities in our cause. If that means that we might be able to assist people, well, who knows how things are going to unfold. But for the moment, our plan is that we're going to be the finest cafe in the country.
And it'd be a nice stop off on your way through, you know, kind of thing. Because I found a lot of people, when they go on long road trips, they always like to stop off at a cafe. Why not this one? Now, speaking of which, the whole concept of coffee shops and so on and so forth, what has the example of the Netherlands actually taught people about cannabis prohibition and a regulated market?
Oh, I think that the fact that the coffee shops in
Amsterdam,
Amsterdam, but virtually every town and city in Holland. The Netherlands, Holland, there are coffee shops. It is a responsible approach, but it is still illegal in Holland. They allow small quantities of cannabis to be sold through coffee shops, but they don't allow anybody to grow it. So the growing of cannabis in Holland is still an illegal activity. And from time to time, you will see news of a major bust where a grow op has been closed down. They have tried to improve their laws and regulations and faced extreme opposition from the United States in the main. So they've just carried on as they've been doing for some time and seeking to do the best for their community. And, you know, we're doing the same. And it will not be long, and America will realize that their drug laws and their drug war is based on nonsense and needs to be changed. And, you know, if Obama is listening to the show today, and he should be, this is American Freedom Radio, so President Obama from little old New Zealand down here in the bottom of the Pacific, here's a special plea. If you want to be remembered kindly by a population in 100 years or 200 years' time, then be the man that's responsible for changing evil cannabis prohibition laws. You know, because you've toked, that it is not a harmful substance, and you just have to stand up to the pressure groups and make these changes, not just for your own country, but it is your country that's dictating this evil policy around the world, and it is time to change, and you will gain a whole host of new friends if you step up to the mark and do what you know in your heart is right. So, President Obama, legalize. That's the call. Legalize and regulate.
Now, we have the caller lines open, so American listeners can now call in. And if you're calling from overseas, you just got to put in an 01 in before that to call into the United States. The number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525 if you'd like to come on and talk about cannabis prohibition today. Other interesting elements within this course is also the great trauma. I mean, personally speaking, being arrested and then having lies told about you, even when you admit all of the alleged wrongdoing, you know, myself selling cannabis and so on and so forth, and then the police still manufacture evidence as court, even when they've got all the evidence that they need to convict you, just to trump up the charges. And this strikes me as one of the most interesting phenomenons, is because the law is a lie, they have liars enforcing it.
Yeah, that is a very sad indictment on our society. But when you are seeking to enforce bad laws, then they're usually enforced by bad people. And sometimes they're just blindly following or instructions. But there are many good police officers around the world, and the good ones understand that cannabis is not a bad thing, and if they can, they will turn that blind eye. But unfortunately, there's not enough of them, and the sooner we can change the law so that we can be part of regular society. You know, one of the sad things is that there is this looking down your nose at people. In the past, over the years, we've had different groups of society that have been the target. I mean, in my youth, the target were people like gay. Before gay meant homosexual, when gay meant happy, there were it was almost okay to attack homosexuals physically, and if the police came along, they didn't take too much interest because, you know, you're a horrible, nasty gay person that doesn't deserve the backing of the law because you're actually doing something that's illegal. Now, that was the approach during the 50s and the 60s when I was a young fella. But today, we understand, we're better educated, that we're all part of life's wondrous melting pot. We're all human beings. We're all entitled to freedom of choice with matters that affect our own personal well-being and our own lifestyle. And the sooner we include cannabis and cannabis users in that freedom of choice and freedom of life choice, then the better.
Mm.
So
it affects almost everybody in society, you know, from the top to the bottom. I remember I got up in front of crowds a couple of times and I asked, okay, show of hands, if you know somebody who has ever used cannabis, you know, pretty much every single hand goes up.
Yep.
All right, now keep your hands up if you want to see any of those people go to jail. Every single hand goes down. Time to change the law.
Correct. Nobody wants to see people be sent to jail. Occasionally you will find some people that say, well, if you're selling illegal drugs or producing illegal drugs, then you should go to jail. But they don't understand that it's a supply and demand situation. We all enjoy a toke, and if I can't buy a joint from someone, then I'm going to grow it myself because people that are in the cannabis culture just don't see that the law has any bearing on their lives other than as a negative influence. So you're not going to stop it by declaring that it's bad. Because we all know that's a lie.
Is the law not broken hundreds of thousands of times a day? I mean, like, you say you've got three people in a circle. Each time somebody passes a joint to another person, that's supplying cannabis or possession for supply and so on and so forth.
By its very nature, the fact that it's illegal means that I constantly am breaking the law. Every time I roll a joint, every time I take a toke, every time I pass it to a friend or somebody that's around me. Those are all illegal activities and capable of individual
charges,
any one of which can force me to be incarcerated. Look, I was a free man for 9 days last year, and the police came and raided us and effectively closed down our business. I'm still fighting those charges. They want to lock me up. Maximum penalty at this time is 14 years.
Right.
And this is because they found some butter in our premises. Butter. Yes, that's right, butter that had been mixed with cannabis for the purposes of baking baked goods. Now, there are plenty of people that cannot smoke, and so they can eat medicine. They can eat a cake, a cookie. In order to make a cookie, you need a bit of butter that's been mixed with cannabis. And the police found some of this butter in the fridge, and I'm now facing 14 years imprisonment because they said that's illegal and it's bad, and we caught you red-handed, and it's just all nonsense. And, you know, so the fight goes on. We will fight this in the courtrooms, we will fight it on the doorstep of the parliament. We will fight it everywhere that there's anybody reasonable and sensible willing to listen.
Dr. Green, ladies and gentlemen, the Winston Churchill of cannabis.
We'll fight him on the beaches. Hey.
Well, see, ironically,
that sounds a bit pirate-like. I didn't mean that.
See, ironically, you're actually still fighting a form of fascism, aren't you?
Well, yes. I don't like to put labels on it in that sense. What we're really fighting is ignorance. Ignorance and prejudice. When people abuse me because I am advocating cannabis law reform and I get abused, I'm a hippie, I'm a dirty hippie, I'm unemployed, dirty hippie, all of these labels that people throw at me is only thrown at me because opponents to legalizing have no actual sensible argument to it, it's blind prejudice, and they think that if they abuse me and call me dirty names, that somehow that makes them feel better and somehow our argument will disappear. The fact is we're the ones that have science on our side and we are winning. One vote at a time, we are winning.
Well, the only tool that they really have in their box here in terms of argument is more or less just logical fallacy. So there's the appeal to ridicule. Oh, you're a stoner, therefore you're silly. There's the appeal to authority. Well, it's illegal for a reason. It must be. And so on and so forth. Just and ad hominem attacks, just insulting you, just in general. And I recall an argument, more like I was just being told this by my uncle, who was very, very drunk at the time and scabbing a cigarette off me at the time whilst telling me that I'll never amount to a whole lot because I smoke cannabis.
Thank you, Uncle Bludger, stealing my cigarettes, you drunken bum. Yep, I understand exactly the hypocrisy that people that are closest to us are indulging in, but it's just reflecting the approval that society gives to the individuals by having these nasty laws. You know, homosexuals were abused and ridiculed years ago because it was against the law to do that. Today, it's against the law to smoke a joint, so we're today's target. Tomorrow, it'll be somebody else. Unfortunately, that's just the way it is. We don't support that. But the sooner that we legalize cannabis, the sooner that we can be treated as equal citizens that we're entitled to be treated as.
It would be rather nice if I could not be insulted or attacked or instantly switched off because of my personal use of cannabis, because it has no bearing on that whatsoever. Okay, you take people who are really talented, very successful. The argument is, if you smoke cannabis, you'll always be a loser. Okay, didn't Bob Dylan smoke cannabis? Isn't he like a massive musician and stuff like that? Aren't there copious quantities of musicians, presidents of the United States that have smoked cannabis,
lead researchers? Don't get me started on names, Vinny. There's hardly a musician. Do you know what sort of music would exist if we didn't have cannabis available for musicians?
Really terrible stuff. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com 218.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. The travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I smoke everywhere, man. I smoke everywhere.
He smokes on the cannabis. It's the mobile smoking lounge, ladies and gentlemen, coming
I
to a town.
I smoke in
near
Parliament grounds, man. You were actually allowed to smoke there. Did you know that?
No, I did not know
that.
The
Speaker of the House.
Is that how the politicians get away with it?
The Speaker of the House said to the police that if they stay behind the barriers, meaning us protesters, if we stay behind the barriers and there's no violence on the lawns of Parliament, then there should be no arrests. So we've taken that as being permission to consume cannabis in Parliament. So We're down in Wellington next week, next Wednesday, 4 o'clock. We're going to prepare and have a big smoke up come 4:20, because that's what we do. And we will be encouraging Parliament to treat us like human beings.
Well, that's interesting. Now, speaking of which, there was a point that I wanted to raise about music and cannabis. And indeed, this is how it started to get into the mainstream American culture. And in fact, I believe one of the very reasons why it got made illegal was racism. And black musicians and so on and so forth using cannabis, going out and doing the great music and so on and whatnot. And then you think... And you made an interesting point in the last segment there, Dactyl, and we've only got a few minutes left. So if anybody wants to call in, 218-339-8525 is the thing. But, you know, just think of just a few off you know, off the top of my head. If cannabis didn't exist, musicians that wouldn't exist either. Bob Marley, Cypress Hill, Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Jimi Hendrix, The Doors, Rolling Stones, The Beatles. I mean, can you think of any greater influence on culture in general of any other substance? I mean, come on. It's almost essential for human life.
Well, it is essential for human life, and the fact is that we have cannabinoid receptors in our brain, and cannabis is a plant that was designed for human beings to consume. And the fact that there are so many, and it's not just musicians, but talented people, artists of all kinds. It allows a human being, an individual, to go places with their mind that is not possible without the mind-altering substance of cannabis. It is a mind-opening substance. So, look, there's many, many wonderful paintings and poems and songs, music generally, movies, you name it. Look at anybody that's involved in these activities creatively, and you will usually see cannabis somewhere in that person's life. So, yeah, it's a it's had a major influence on the creativity of talented artists around the world.
Come a long way from the days of Reefer Madness and the very poor quality filmmaking that you'd expect from people who don't use cannabis.
Yeah, well, Reefer Madness, unfortunately, still rears its head from time to time. I was interviewed a couple of years ago by a television station here, and I agreed to do the in-depth interview on the grounds that it was a serious approach to our cause. I would be happy to bare my soul if it was straight up and down, and specifically said there should be no Reefer Madness. And what did they call the item when it went to air? Reefer Madness. So it's still out there. The media still tell lies. And that's why you, Vinny, with your various activities and the time that I've known you over many years now, whilst I don't always agree with you, we have had some most fascinating debates about all sorts of crazy subjects. And it's important that people like you are out there giving us alternatives. And for that, on behalf of mankind, I thank you, Vinny Mann, for a wonderful job.
Well, thank you very much. I do my best. You know, and it occurs to me, you know, there's not just one method of suppression that's going on through society. And it's like everybody's got their focal points. And I find it's that when people take a focus and they make a mission out of their life, that's when they truly become effective people in accomplishing their goals. And this is what I believe you've done for the cannabis movement like no other in this country's history in terms of that. And my goal is essentially not specifically just cannabis or specifically just, you know, conspiracy theories or anything like that, but there's a massive spectrum of subjects and suppressions that we're all affected by that are simply not covered to any great extent in the media. And more to the point, it's always demonized and it's not friendly. It's an attack-based interviewing system. And I prefer to give people some comfort give them some space, and give them some coverage, no matter what their topic might be, just so long as they're an active and effective person in that particular area of their research, because it makes for great radio.
And even if they're wrong.
Even if they're wrong.
Because if they're wrong, then you have the opportunity to point out their wrongness to them, and that creates a debate and a meaningful education process for your listeners. So on you, mate, on you.
Well, see, the vast majority of my guests, much like yourself, are people who are coming on and saying that the establishment is wrong. And they'd be right, you know.
Yes, well, you might be right.
But
let's debate that, shall we?
Yes. Because, you know, you've got to think about institutionalisation and having actually been to prison, I was wondering what the psychological effects are. Did you change as a person and how you interact with other people since being incarcerated? Has there been some kind of a psychological trauma visited upon you that still affects you to this day, that kind of thing?
Oh, I think there is a trauma of sorts when you're in jail. I've done a few jail times now, and as short as overnight in a police cell, and up to 3 years in prison for all cannabis-related activity. What was your point again?
I'm just wondering if you could actually relay to people what kind of things you've actually gone through, and how it's changed you just in your daily life.
Well, when I was released June last year, after a 11 and a half months incarcerated, I would have to say that the term post-traumatic stress syndrome probably would be close to the mark, the way I felt for weeks and weeks afterwards. I mean, you're released from this sterile environment, which is full of, at times, psycho, crazy people. Not all of them. Many of them, of course, have committed some sort of crime when they've been under the influence of, substances, alcohol or whatever. And mostly they're pretty decent people. There are some real criminals in jail, but in the main, they're just ordinary people that get caught in the wrong place at the wrong time doing something that many of us are doing anyway, like a drunk driver, for example. We all there but for the grace of God go I moment. But look, there is nothing. I cannot think of a single redeeming feature which I would encourage people to go to jail to experience. There is nothing about jail that is worthy of experiencing. It is where we put our bad people. It's a little bit like children at school, go stand in the corner, put this dunce's hat on. That was the way we used to do it, this pointed cap, you with a big D on it. You were the dunce, you were the dumbass. And you were sent to stand in the corner until you learnt the error of your ways. And in a more sophisticated way, we now have society that takes people that enjoy having a smoke, enjoy having a toke or growing a plant, growing flowers, for goodness sake, they think, well, you're a naughty boy, we're going to put you in the corner. But in this instance, we call our corner prison. And you will go there for various lengths of time, and following which, you know, come out and get back on with your life. The problem is that the actual effect of going to jail can mean for many people the loss of their family, their loved ones. And I don't mean just separation from them. Their marriages break up through the stress and strains of this enforced separation. It can be a traumatic time. Children lose in the main, their fathers. The consequences of being sent to jail are irrecoverable in many instances. So jail, prison should be kept for those truly bad people, and it should never be used to seek to control drug laws. or drug consumption. That is a health issue, not a criminal issue. And I think there's a recognition of that around the world. It's starting to move more in as a health issue now. And that's good. That's I applaud that. Because, as I said before, there is no redeeming features about prison. It's just a bad scene.
This is true. Now, we've come to the end of the show, Dancer, and I just wanted to recount one instance, I believe, when one of your supporters got a letter back from the minister saying that the reason why cannabis is illegal is because it might be linked to bronchitis. And he made the point, a very poignant observation, how is being sent to prison going to help protect me from bronchitis?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
No, I don't get it either. And the reasoning that politicians give, particularly in this country, do not stand up to scrutiny. So it's time to change the law. It's time to be positive and be a happy country.